Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Third Stream View. I'm your host, PK, here, willing to solve most of the world's problems, especially the U.S.'s mess. And this would be for Monday evening, March 26th, 2012. And as always, I thank the suits in the office at bbsradio.com for promoting free speech, free thought, free press, freedom of assembly, I would hope. The whole Bill of Rights, because you can't really have one without the other. They're all very important, although the American Civil Liberties Union seems to forget that. But PK doesn't. So we have the current tragedy in Afghanistan going on. This guy, the soldier, goes out and whacks all these innocent people, so bringing shame upon him, the country, and the military. So that's not nice. And I have a couple guests tonight I'm going to invite back. I have my friend John coming back on. And my friend Angad, who was here last week, he's coming on, hopefully. So we're going to chat about world events, geopolitics, war, unemployment, with my humor mixed in, of course. And again, well, I haven't said it yet, but if you care to call in, we're at 888-429-5471. And the gentleman in the office will put you through to me. So again, that number to call in is 888-429-5471. We're going to contact these friends of mine soon. Hopefully they're out and about, ready to be interviewed by the mighty PK. And let me check while I'm there. Is John out there yet? I guess not, out there in cyberspace. So we're going to try my other friend. And they're going to chat about, again, we're going to chat about employment. My young friend we'll be talking with, is I think he's running an employment fair tomorrow. And the interesting thing about both of my guests is that they were both born outside of the U.S. So that puts an interesting take on things. And I'm chatting with the suits right now. Anyway, so Obama's over in Korea. I guess he's renewing our commitment to defend the Korean Peninsula from the evil commies in the north that apparently the 40 million in the south can't properly defend against the 20 million in the north, a half-starving communist paradise. And I see that John is out there. John, are you out there, my friend?
Right here. Yes.
Welcome back. I know you're on a tight schedule and you can only stay about, 25 minutes or so, but we thank you for coming on.
Yeah.
I have another friend that's going to join us, young fella, and hopefully. And the interesting thing is that both of you gentlemen, and when I say gentlemen, I use the word loosely, unless I'm referring to myself, thank you very much. Both of you gentlemen were born outside of USA.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, well, yeah. So
No.
No, I understand. But it's an interesting, you have an interesting take on things. But you know you're with a friend here because your friend PK here knows world history and world geography.
I know. The thing is, it doesn't matter where you were born. As long as you travel the world,
yes,
travel different places, then you get the perspective about things, about cultures, about places, what works, how it works, and why it works or why it doesn't work.
That's true, especially if you don't travel with the attitude of comparing everything to, you know, USA or wherever you're from, especially if it's a first world country.
Well, because, you know, you just don't know anything besides your own surroundings, and you don't have any kind of perspective, any kind of, you know, comparison or whatever, however you call it.
Excuse me, there's books, travel shows, movies, many ways to learn.
Yes, but that's not the same. When you literally go, ask any Army veteran that was outside, especially in the places like where they are sending them and everything, they will tell you. And you know, you exactly know what I'm talking about.
Are you talking about military soldiers now?
For example, these are the people from the United States of America that travel probably the most on the foreign mission. So those people they've been to the part of the world that most of us never visited.
Well, that's why, you know, I like that expression. War is God's way of teaching Americans geography.
Yeah, well.
And so the fact, in my case, since I always loved geography and history, I did well in it in school, but it prepared me when I traveled because I know I was clued in. For example, I would like to visit India, and I know I'll see the worst poverty ever in the world, but I also know from friends who've been there that, you know, after you're there for a while, India takes you in. It's the culture. You're kind of taken into it all. And I want to come back enlightened because I was there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also your mindset, too. You know, so many Americans, I know when they go on cruises in like in foreign countries, I'm talking about, you know, first world, Europe, you know, Caribbean, they'll go to McDonald's.
Yeah, that's not the same where the tourists are taken and everything.
No, it's not the same, but they are next to other restaurants and other, you know, good foods and things that they can enjoy.
Yeah.
It's that mindset, and it shows a certain arrogance towards the rest of the world, I think, too.
Yeah, a little bit, but you know, it's all personal. I just traveled. You say you were to the poor parts of the world. Last year, I went to Brazil.
I'm jealous.
But not only to like Rio or Sao Paulo, all those big cities or anything like that. I went to Iguazu, of course, the beautiful waterfalls in the middle of the jungle. But I also visited a very small place. Places where the asphalt road is a luxury, you know, stuff like that. Places where if you're a little bit wealthier, you've got your property surrounded by 10,000 volt fans, electric fans, and stuff like that, and so on and so forth. So I've seen things just recently, you know. And then, of course, I went to other parts. I was in Bosnia, I was in Montenegro.
Really?
Yeah, all this. Little,
on ships?
No, on land.
Wow.
Recently, what else? Several years ago, I visited the Ukrainian.
How was that?
That's a different country.
Did former you remember Soviet, your Russian?
Part of Soviet Union, yes.
Sorry, is Ukrainian a different language than Russian?
You know what? They are somewhat related. They are very similar. Think of Portuguese and Spanish. That kind of differences or similarities, whatever you call it.
Because I didn't know if the Ukrainians were forced to learn Russian, you know, after the war or before the war.
Well, we were. The Soviet bloc, because you know that was the culture, that was the thing that was imposed by the regime. So everybody had to. You went to the primary school. You started with the fifth, sometimes fourth or fifth grade. Bam! The Russian language was introduced, which is not bad, because there was also we had to learn first of all Russian and German. I'm originally from Poland, so neighboring countries. But then, of course, people learn English. So people, usually in Europe, it's common people to speak several languages, which makes it also, you understand the world better that way, too.
Oh, definitely. How's your German these days?
Yeah.
Is your German still fairly strong?
Well, you know, I don't speak the language, so it goes away. Like anything, if you don't use something, if you don't constantly utilize it every day, it just goes away because you don't do it every day. And their human speech is the most hard thing to probably retain. Last year, I became quite semi-fluent with Portuguese.
Really?
Towards September, October, my second and third visit to Brazil.
Wow. Oh, you've been more than once.
Didn't speak ever since, you know. So
wow.
I would have to, but, you know, it's just picking up the headphones for a week, 2 weeks, brush up again, and everything's come back.
Obrigado.
Yeah.
Hey, have you been to Minas Gerais?
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Minas Gerais?
Yeah.
That area?
Yeah.
Nice?
In Ho Chi Minh, places like Ouro Preto. Yeah. Beautiful. We even traveled from Belo Horizonte by car to Rio de Janeiro, through the mountains and everything. Middle of the country, middle of nowhere, at places.
You feel safe?
Well, yeah, because I was with my very good friend.
You had a girl to defend you.
Well, it's a long story. Anyway,
no, I mean, did she feel safe too? Is it, you know, were you, when you're off the beaten path, pretty safe? No banditos?
Well, yes, because they know where their whereabouts and everything. Of course, you know. But you know, you just have to know where to go and where not to go, and you know that.
Yeah, like in USA.
Exactly. Oh goodness, yeah.
Now, John, I'm changing the subject here a bit, but how about this murder last week? The GI goes and kills all these people. Good way to make things better in Afghanistan, huh?
Well, it's a war with no end. First of all, those people, they don't want what we are trying to impose. I mean, not speaking of we. I mean, our government.
Federal government, that's right.
Because people have absolutely nothing to do with, you know, like, or you ask anybody, nobody really thinks of it on a daily basis. Oh, we are in Afghanistan. We are actually, our country, believe it or not, you know, when you go to the grocery store and everything, you don't know it. But we are in a constant war for the last...
Yep.
10 years, our country has been in active war with other countries.
And speaking of grocery stores, how about those creeping prices?
Well, everything creeps. You know,
and at this moment, John, I want to welcome my friend Angad back. Angad, are you out there, my man?
Yeah, how you doing?
Good. Say hi to my friend John. John, this is Angad.
Hey, how's it going, John?
Now, on God, my friend John is from Eastern Europe. He was not born in USA, and you have an Indian background, although you were born in Barbados.
Yep, that's correct.
Both of you born outside the USA. So, welcome to my show, and I think it's interesting that both of you were born outside this country, so you also bring a slightly different point of view and this and that. And, once again, I want you both to know that I could find both of your countries of origins immediately on a map or the globe. And I'm an American born. What do you think about that?
That's awesome. Well, you traveled yourself. You're one of those. So.
Yeah, but I traveled before that with books and thinking about it and always interested in it. I loved National Geographic TV and all these sort of things. Loved it. My grandmother was born in Italy.
I think
Say what?
I think one day you may become a good politician on international relations or something.
Well, I would prefer statesman. Now, John, our friend Angad is a bit younger than you, and you're younger than me. So Angad is in his beginning to be the late 20s there. But his take on things, of course, as you know, and of course, both of you are big fans of Ron Paul. But in Angad's case, John, his generation is especially saddled with debt and unemployment.
Yes.
And Angad, what are you up to tomorrow? Are you hosting a jobs fair?
Yeah, actually be attending a job fair.
Oh, you're attending one?
Yeah.
So is that where that lot of, because I've never been to one, is that where a lot of employers have their booths and they interview people?
Yeah, it's basically set up where a lot of different employers are available, and you get to speak to them one-on-one.
Uh-huh. And how's the job market looking?
Don't know where it's going to go from now.
Now, our friend John here, my friend John is a very, very accomplished musician, a brilliant pianist. That's P-I-A-N-I-S-T, pianist. And fortunately, your work is pretty steady, isn't it, John?
Yes, but I make myself very diverse in everything. You know, it's a game. Life these days is a game anyway.
Yeah.
Because once you are born, once you educate yourself, you're on your own and you're finding out that the world becomes increasingly harder and harder for anybody to exist.
Well, that's that's right in a sense, but I would say that's because governments, especially this one, makes it more difficult by more taxes, more inflation, and more regulation. And the inflation hurts the lower income people, the fixed income people, and the poor the most.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Angad is, we talked before, he's an old friend of mine. We talked about, he's not too thrilled with his current job. I'm saying, well, that's cool, but just be glad you have a job. I mean, he's a college graduate. He's in grad school. I said, you know, I'm glad you have a job, Angad, but, you know, before you find another one, just make sure you got something, you know, to fall back on, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, that's the key here. You and me were kind of discussing about this the other day where, you know, I guess our generation kind of gotten accustomed to job hopping without really recognizing the consequences, but, you know, I guess sooner or later, I mean, you have to bite the bullet and, you know, face what's at you and try to get the best out of it.
Yeah, yeah. Now, John, and check this out, Angad. John, you sent me an email earlier in the week, I think later last week, about an ad you saw for something like sort of like Free Energy.
Ha ha!
Have you looked into that much?
Yes, the person... This is one of the most hated person by the
power companies.
And energy industry.
You may have seen like these ads too, Angad. It's about you buy his equipment and you can produce pretty much your own electrical energy. Is it?
Okay. Well, yeah.
You're off the grid.
Mm-hmm. I might have to take a look at that. I don't think I've been kind of acclimated with it.
Well, I've seen the ads before. Is it very expensive, John?
Well, yeah, but I think better thing is our climate in our, you know, like California or Florida or Arizona, states like that, just install solar panels and be completely off-grid. But the trick is they won't let you.
You mean his technology requires some solar?
No, I didn't study his technology.
Okay.
But whatever you do, you can't get off-grid, probably.
The power company went to check on my uncle last winter of 2011 because bill was so low, they thought he was stealing power when he was mostly using his fireplace. because he kind of has a smaller apartment, and he's older guy and kind of crotchety, and he, you know, he's got the money, just didn't want to spend it. So they actually came to check and see if he was stealing power, which he wasn't.
Yeah. See, that's the stupidity of this whole entire industry and the government and everything, because government is in control of that. So they want.
Yeah, they're in bed together. Those are those public private partnerships. The whole energy grid is sort of a government corporate sort of protected thing.
They will never make it private. Probably,
right.
Ever.
Well, they want the free gravy train, and they support regulation. But both of you guys, you guys are both hip to Nikola Tesla, aren't you?
Yeah.
You know about him, Angad?
I haven't heard too much about him.
No, you've heard the name, though, right?
Yeah,
the name sounds familiar.
What he proposed back then was that would be brilliant to have the free energy for everybody. But, you know, the government just stepped in and said, wait a minute, no.
Well, as I understand it, he wanted to transmit energy through the air, through the airwaves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he was opposed by this, although, you know, you also wonder, well, how much radiation does that bring, or this and that, you know, but it would have been all worked out by now. But he was one of Edison's employees, as I understand it. Then he went on his own, and of course, Edison, you know, he didn't care for him too much, probably partly jealousy, but they said that Edison was a brilliant guy who was, you know, trial and error, and you know, but Tesla could lay on his back and just think things through. He was brilliant. He was more of a genius than Edison was. A hardworking inventor, brilliant guy, but I think Tesla was at another level.
Mm-hmm. I think you had actually mentioned about this before.
Yeah, and we're never taught about these people in school. So another person is Royal Raymond Rife, R-I-F-E, who was curing cancers in the 20s and 30s, crushed by the AMA and the American Cancer Society. I would never give them a dime, because they helped to oppress other alternative cancer doctors and whatnot. So which is why the alternative clinics are outside of the U.S. or in Mexico or whatnot, but they weren't driven out by their customers. They were driven out by the regulatory agencies. Mm-hmm. So let's move along now. Let's get over back to a wonderful Afghanistan, who's never had a powerful central government, who's always been tribal, who's always been centuries behind, and seemingly content to be that way.
And the thing is that this country wants to stay that way. Those people, they don't really want to change their life. They don't want our system of life, system of values, whatever, the Anglo-Saxonian, you know what I mean. But the thing is that whatever the central government, the government that, the party that wants to make the world dependent, centralized in the future, make kind of, you know, socialistic. They will do everything in their power to try to conquer the rest of the world that hasn't been dominated yet.
Well,
namely,
what do you...
Arabic world, Arabic cultures, countries like Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iran, Iraq, then Africa, you know, countries that are kind of behind, but then at the same time they don't want that centralized government to step in and, you know, just establish their status quo over there as well. So
what do you mean they want to stay like that? Can't we send young guys over there on God's age to force them at the point of a gun to accept democracy?
Of course we can. And that's what we do.
And it's such a brilliant success. It worked for Alexander, the Russians, and the British.
Yeah, the same, by the same token, it will work for our country. We will spend billions, oh my God, trillions, quadrillions of dollars, and just for the, another 50 years or something it is, and then at the end of that period, we'll discover that basically nothing changed. We just wasted worse than Vietnam, almost.
More expensive.
Yeah, okay.
It might even be, Angad, I don't know if you know this, I'm not exactly sure yet, both of you gentlemen, actually, again, I use the word gentleman loosely, these wars in just, you know, basically these two places, Afghanistan and Iraq, when you allow for inflation, I think by this point, they cost more than World War II.
Yes, they do, but they only benefit few. Few people just benefit from those wars, namely the weapons manufacturers, you know, people
the
like
military
that.
Industrial complex and the Israeli lobby.
Yeah, basically, yes. So that's what it is, and clearly, you know, it's relatively easy to do that in our country because our society doesn't really care about where our government is sending the troops as they should care.
We just support the troops, blindly support the troops. Most Americans couldn't even find those countries on a map.
But we are supporting the troops. We are supporting those wars, supporting wasting millions and billions of dollars. Not only that, all those people are coming back from this war, the war veterans. Those people are injured, not only injured physically, but also mentally, morally. Their families are falling apart and everything. And then the government, what the government is doing, they just send them to live under the bridge or something. You know, they just don't care.
Like yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a great point by John. I mean, you know, really just, you know, the country's just really turning its back at the military itself. And, you know, really, you know, going back to John's point, too, I mean, you know, we want everybody else to kind of assimilate, you know, with the U.S. culture. And all these people are saying is, look, we have no problem with you, but, you know, just let us be.
Well, the future looks, I'm rather pessimistic about things. And, you know, young fellows like you, Angad, I wonder what lies ahead as far as lessened employment opportunities, more debt. It seems like it's almost a permanent war economy, so contrary to the ideals of this country. And I forgot to say hello to those pricks from the CIA and the FBI and the NSA who are listening and monitoring my show. To me, they're basically a bunch of traitors, but they serve the regime. They would love to silence me. They would love to silence these alternative stations. They would love to have a switch to turn the internet on and off, which I think they're still working on. And because the internet has turned things upside down, as you guys know. Yeah, there's some BS on it, of course, but there's a lot of truth that gets through. And thank goodness for Julian Assange, or Assange, however you pronounce his last name, and Private Manley, if you know this poor fellow who's in the brig and facing just horrible things from the military, quote-unquote, justice.
Yep. Well, yeah. You know, that's what happened to those people.
Well, you see how they treat Ron Paul. You know, Romney, Obama, they all serve the regime. It doesn't matter who wins as long as the banksters are in control, the Illuminati, the Zionist banksters in league with the military-industrial complex, the Bush-Rockefeller wing of things.
Yeah,
and, of course, the Rothschilds, too. That's the power structure.
I don't know how many times I was laughing at the current election in GOP, current race, to the, you know, because every time they showed, like, a debate or something, or afterwards, and everything, like articles, you always had those three guys even though we had four people participating, including Dr. Paul, you always had the picture with the Gingrich, Santorum.
Oh, yeah.
And of course,
Dr. Paul is known outside of this country, too. There is even small support groups in foreign countries for him, people who are big fans of his.
Yeah.
Hey, John, were you referring to those three as the Three Stooges?
Yeah, but the problem is that Dr. Paul is too good for this country.
John, I can't hear you.
You know, They will never let people like like Ron Paul to really, you know, do much.
Well, he's going to stick it out till the convention. So I would love to see a brokered convention. I would love to see a wrench thrown into the gears.
Well, yes. We'll see what happens. But to me, right now, what the GOP brings with this election. Our current president is going to stay in the office for the next 4 years. If any of these other three guys wins the GOP ticket to rival our current president, he's going to lose big time. You know that.
I think you're right. I think Ron Paul is the only Republican that can beat Obama, and they're just puppets for the bankster regime. So it doesn't matter unless it was Ron Paul who wins, because basically the same foreign policy, the debt and the spending will continue.
But you know what the saddest thing is? That people don't recognize it.
My two guests recognize it, and they weren't even born in the damn country.
Well, yes, but you know, we are in this minority that supports big ideas like Ron Paul. Mr. PK, I have to finish right now. You can continue your interview and everything, because I have other obligations to do. But it
Thank
was
you
very
so much.
Nice.
Thank you for joining us, John. We'll talk to you again soon. Take care. Thank you for your ideas and your input.
Thank you very much.
Good night.
Thanks,
Angad,
good night.
You still there, my friend?
Yep, still here.
So tell us about this jobs fair. Now, that's something you're going to attend tomorrow?
Yeah, I'm just going to check it out and see where it goes.
Is it during the day?
Yeah, it's just a couple of hours. Just going to, you know, head out there. And
Does that conflict with your day job?
Yeah, there is a little bit of a conflict with that. But, of course, I've been kind of given a little bit of an excuse to get through it, so...
you kind of finagled a way to go do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's good, because I know you weren't too thrilled with your current employer, and I guess he hasn't been very forthcoming or forthright, whatever the word is, about doing the things for you they said they would, or giving you the money, or giving you this and that they said they would. Am I right?
Yeah, I think, that's part of it, but... certainly, it's just not, you know, one scenario. There's been many scenarios where you're dealing with a lot of, corporations or companies that just don't really, go by with ethics.
Well, not only that, but nowadays, they can, just like it's a buyer's market for homes in this depressed, economy, employers can sort of have their pick, so many unemployed people, and they can, choose who they want, basically. Not that they couldn't before, but, what I'm saying, they have more at their disposals, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a good point, too. I mean, it's almost like we've kind of reverted into, obviously not as bad as the Great Depression, but, I mean, people were just kind of fighting and, struggling to get through, to even work at the docks, just pick up a shift at the docks and, try to make some sort of money for their family. And maybe it's not as bad as that situation, at that point in time. But certainly, a lot of these employers kind of have, people around the neck.
Yeah, well, yeah, and it's not necessarily their doing, because we know that the Federal Reserve caused this mess.
Yep.
So that's, that's a big problem. And it's because its tentacles are everywhere and all its reserve banks. So it's... caused this whole mess and made young folks like you struggle more. And, you know, because we were talking about, I think, last week where you said, yeah, you know, you think you go to school and you do well, you hope you get a decent job. Well, now things are different. So I hope you get something else going on. Are you interested in getting some kind of while you're in school still before you find that, you know, job you're really interested in? Are you trying to get some kind of finance jobs or stuff like that in the finance world?
You know, I guess, yeah. I mean, you know, that's kind of the main route that I'm going to take, you know, something with regards to finance and management. But I think the biggest thing, too, is that I'm very open-minded to, you know, what's around me. And,
sure.
You know, that I'm not just going to, you know, stick in the U.S. for opportunities. If opportunity comes in another country, say Japan, you know, somewhere in Asia, Europe is another example. You know, you certainly have to be kind of receptive. But of course, you know, I'm sure, you know, other countries are also going through, you know, the same situation. You know, like we were actually discussing the other day about, you know, other countries kind of going the Keynesian way, and now they're suffering too. So certainly, you know, that's something to factor into.
Oh, gee, they're only suffering because of Keynesianism, because they didn't print enough money or spend enough money or run big enough deficits.
Right.
Paul Krugman, that idiot, that's probably what he would have had him do, if you know who he is, from the New York Times. I think he won the Nobel Prize for economics. I mean, I don't even think he's much of an economist. Definitely a Keynesian. And, you know, looking astonished when he hears contrary point of views, that's the humor I get out of it. But
right.
It's interesting that you're able to go to this fair. I'm glad you're hanging in there. Now, I know that you've been to India before, and you had once considered maybe relocating there for employment in the future. And that's all good. But I mean, like nowadays, would it be even more difficult? Cause since India's coming up, isn't it even more competitive over there to get a good job?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword in that regard. It's definitely coming up, and, you know, we were kind of talking about Bangalore, being kind of like the Silicon Valley you know, India, but, you know, certainly there's a lot of opportunities available. I mean, yeah, despite...
Are there really? So you don't think that you would be a small fish in a huge pond?
You know, I think maybe at this point in time, culturally speaking, it might be, you know, a little bit to adjust to at this point in time, but, you know, certainly India's growing, and I mean, you know, there's plenty of Americans that are working out there as well, or even Europeans for that matter.
How's your Hindi these days? If you go, if you went there tomorrow for a week or two, could you communicate pretty well?
I think I'd probably be able to pick it up, but you know.
But you don't write their language, but you could speak it.
Yeah, I think at one point in time, I could kind of do both of them in a good level. But you know, my family will probably joke with you about it that you know my Hindi's kind of butchered.
Do they have their – I know this is a dumb question. I think I know the answer, but doesn't India have its own sort of alphabet or you know, writing system or whatever?
I mean, it's with Sanskrit, but –
Sanskrit would be their writing, their alphabet?
You know, I'm not honestly 100% sure, so I think I'm kind of on the same boat with you on that one.
Because English has, come to the forefront in India.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's interesting. And of course, to patronize you here, I know the Indian culture fairly well through you and your family and just reading about it and being around it. But what I notice is, usually strong family structure, strong emphasis on education, respect, you know, very low crime rates in this country, hardly, you know. I mean, if you see, I would think you see young Indians come before the judge for something. That's very, very rare.
Yeah, I think actually there was a case recently, though, I believe in New Jersey. I don't know if you've been following that case with Rutgers, where one of the gay students had actually committed suicide because his
roommate was. Well, that's, killed. Yeah, I don't even mean anything like that. I mean more like felonies or, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, and other Asian kids, too. It's pretty much you don't see much of that, although there's some Vietnamese gangs, you know, some of this and that, but not on the scale of the other junk that we see.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's definitely certain. I mean, you know, we've been kind of raised, you know, with good values that way. It's kind of growing up, but, you know, as you said too, I mean, you know, that doesn't stop people, you know, from any culture from doing wrong things either.
Oh, sure. But in the case of the Indian culture, although India is coming up, the, what was I going to say? Although India is coming up, usually when Indians emigrate from India and move to other countries, they're usually quite successful.
Yeah, that's definitely a case. You know, even kind of moving, you know, on the foreign front, that definitely is a very valid point.
And one of the best things that ever happened for the country from the British influence was that English is the second language, right?
I mean, you know, anywhere you go, if you go to any of the major cities, like if you go to, you know, Mumbai, you go to Bangalore, you go to any of those places, they're going to speak right, you know, in front of you in plain English. You know, even if you go to the malls,
oh, really?
Everybody out there is trained in, you know, English. So,
but that's a very good thing for India in terms of world trade and communications.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, you know, that's one thing that they have over China is, I mean, you know, in one regard, you know, they've been very open with relations to other countries, not just the U.S. They've been very open in that regard.
Right.
And, English certainly helps, you know, even with having, you know, kind of a poor infrastructure, you know, they're gradually working on that. Certainly that does benefit them, you know, especially in communication.
Well, having said that, yeah, you're right. My friend has his two kids are like 6 and 4, and we were talking about their education and their futures. And I told him about there's some folks out there who are encouraging their children to learn Chinese, which is not a bad idea because this is the future and it's China's century. And of course, Spanish is good also. It is the second language in our country, but. And I know it's kind of cute, it's kind of funny, and sometimes this happens to me too, but I know that you get spoken to in Spanish.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we were kind of giving you an example where the family had lived in Florida for a little while, and you know, we were taking a trip over the beach, and you know, basically, you know, there was a few people out there that thought you know, that we were Hispanic, but I guess it's kind of an easier, you know, I guess it's kind of easy to do that, you know, that think that somebody else is Hispanic, you know.
On God, they're not racist for thinking that, are they?
Absolutely not.
Well, I mean, but I'll say this. When I look at some people, I mean, I could see if I saw you with some other kids, maybe some were Mexicans or Puerto Ricans, I would think you'd blend right in. I mean, Italians can pass for Jewish, Greek, you know, Spanish. So it's not a hate thing. It's just like, if where you live, where there's a large Spanish-speaking population, and you kind of have a bit of that look, you're gonna run into that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know,
and all you can say is, no, I am not. I don't speak Spanish.
Yeah, just to refer me to Apu right there.
Say to who?
Apu from The Simpsons.
Oh yeah.
You
so
know, thank you. Come again.
That's a nice irreverent show.
Yeah.
You still watch it?
You know, I've kind of gotten a little bit out of it. I mean, certainly as a kid, I kind of watched.
How about South Park?
Yeah, South Park, I'd say I'm a little bit into more so than the other shows, I think.
That's because it's more irreverent.
Yeah.
Now, for myself, when I was 16, discovering this man and his music made my life easier and opened my mind up, and I'm speaking of the great Frank Zappa. You know who Frank Zappa was?
Yeah, definitely. I know you've kind of talked to him a little bit about
well, you know, he used to have the mustache, the thick mustache that went down each side of his mouth a little bit, and then he had that square underneath his lower lip. You know, I don't know if you call it a Fu Manchu or whatever it is.
Yeah.
He had a square, shaved like a square. And he was like rock's intellectual, and he was, you know, questioning authority back then and pushing it. He wasn't pushing any kind of socialist agenda, but he was you know, social commentary on government abuse and the wars, censorship. And later in his life, he testified in Congress, so he was quite the guy. And, of course, one of the greatest composers and guitarists of the 20th century.
Yeah, that's kind of a good point you brought up, too, you know, about music and television. I mean, you know, I think Alex Jones has kind of touched on this quite a bit on his shows, but, you know, it just seems like the quality of music, the quality of, you know, television has kind of gone down the drain.
It's awful. Like, but why are you why are you listening to Alex Jones? Isn't he a conspiratorialist? You know, I like to say, I'm fond of saying that people who automatically say that's conspiracy theory or he's a conspiratorialist, that's a way, you've probably heard me mention this before, that is a way, that is a word or a phrase that's used as an attempt, a subtle and not subtle attempt to crush dissent, debate, and inquiry.
Yeah, absolutely.
But not on this show. And it hasn't happened yet because I don't know how widely this show is listened to. I keep it going because I like to sharpen my skills and my wit, but I haven't been able to sharpen my debating skills per se. I mean, they're there, but I haven't had much opposition. The guests I've had, even some that don't agree, for example, Dr. Paul's economics or his domestic agenda, I don't get into it debating him because they're not – these particular guests weren't ones that really got my dander up where I would want to just, you know, let the claws out.
Right.
But I would love to clash with some neocons or the, you know, the pro-war crowd because I like to ask them. So in other words, you want more war during the same time which military suicides are at an all-time high, as are military divorces and military spousal abuse.
I mean, the biggest thing is they're turning their back on, you know, the military personnel, and that's not fair. I mean, again, we touched on this last week about how, you know, Dr. Paul has, you know, the most support with the military than, you know, any of the other candidates. You know, and that's kind of a good point. I mean, where do you draw the line? I mean, these guys are, you know, going to battle and coming back with, you know, basically, you know, the same situation that we dealt with in Nam. And it's not fair on them, and it's not fair on anybody for that matter.
You're right, but the thing about Nam is they won the war, but we had better songs. Yeah. Do you get that?
You were saying, can you repeat that again? I'm sorry.
The thing about Vietnam is they won the war, but we had better songs.
Better songs?
Do you know what that means?
No.
Like the protest songs, the anti-war songs, all of that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that definitely is valid.
Yeah, so that's where the humor comes from on that. But even that war was based on lies and it was staged. The soldiers, of course, fight valiantly, but they fought for lies. And they fought for an agenda that was basically a civil war, and again, a way to further fund the military-industrial complex under the guise of protecting us from spreading communism, when Vietnam never threatened the United States.
Right. And there's also a good point about this. I was actually reading in the paper, I guess it was kind of a political cartoon. I don't know if you had forwarded it to me or, you know, somebody else had kind of sent it out to me, but basically, you know, there was this picture of a, you know, Vietnam veteran who was in a wheelchair asking for change, and you see somebody in the car basically telling him, you know, to screw off and, you know, get lost, and on the back of their bumper sticker, you see something saying, God bless our troops, so it's kind of, you know, funny in one regard and, you know, sad at the same time how, you know, a lot of these pro-war people are like that, but, you know, the moment, you know, somebody from Nam is suffering or even somebody, you know, coming back from the Iraq War or the wars in the Middle East right now, they're just basically turning their cheek on them. And it's like, okay, you're supporting it in one regard, but, you know, in the other situation, then you know, you don't want to, you know, look out for the people that, you know, fought so that you can have, you know, a cushy life, you know.
I used to believe that they're defending us, our rights in our country, but I don't believe that anymore. We've been led to believe that a lot of these, most of these wars were staged, and we're led to believe this by the politicians and the globalists of the day. You know, because to me now, all they're doing is defending a globalist empire, and they're keeping these wars going. And you know, the U.S. is involved in all these different conflicts across the world. When, on God, as you probably will know or understand, that you know, civil wars and conflicts are a constant throughout the world.
Right.
But getting involved in every single one gets more troops killed, costs more. You know, it just expands the size of government, because war is not good for the so quote unquote winning side either, because it makes the state bigger. It expands state power, and they seldom give it up afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no,
Mises talked about that too. So it's good that you know all that stuff now, because it'll help you in your future. And I just hope that and I'm sure you won't, but you or any of your friends or younger fellows that you know will never enlist, because it's all BS, at least now it is. And that's the other thing. With all this unemployment and just a lot of pitiful job markets, you know, a lot of young people are looking at the military and taking that as a job. You know, how bad is that? I wouldn't, you know, if I was a parent, I wouldn't let my kids join. I'd do everything I could to stop them from doing it for today.
Right. I mean, you know, pretty much we've been, you know, put to the corner and just placed there. And it's definitely a tough situation for our generation. But again, I mean, it goes back to being innovative, and you have to think of, you know, creative ways to get past that. You know, of course, I know me and you were kind of discussing about the whole situation with Occupy Wall Street, where while it's not kind of a bad idea, you know, in that regard, you know, to kind of, you know, call out, you know, the crony capitalists, you know, the thing is, like, it's how do you say, I mean, it's difficult to see that as well, because, I mean, there's many people that are, you know, basically, you know, just trying to suck it up and, you know, do to the best of their ability. And, I mean, you know, just complaining about it isn't going to get anything done. I mean, you have to think outside the box, think, okay, how are we going to change the situation? How can we make the situation better instead of just, you know, picketing all over the country about it? You know, not to say that, you know, they don't have a point. Certainly, you know, it's good where they're coming from, but, you know, at the same time, I think it's at a point where, you know, we have to change the way we think about it, not just go, you know, complaining about it, because, you know, for years we didn't do anything about it, and now we're complaining when, you know, it's too little too late, you know?
That's for sure. Boy, are you ever right about that. But the trouble with that crowd, one of the biggest problems is they still want the same government that created this mess to take care of them with a cradle-to-grave mentality. And that's not the purpose of government. It should be to, you know, to defend our rights, keep it safe, you know, and you know, keep the laws objective and, you know, protect our rights. But, you know, little else. And it's just gone way beyond that. And then, you know, subjecting the country to more, like, endless wars.
Right.
And a lot of people just think it's fine.
Right.
You know, they're crazy. I don't get it. And your generation is bearing the brunt of it. No wonder Dr. Paul is so overwhelmed when he speaks on colleges, or he gets so much support.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, you know, Romney and Gingrich and Santorum, they don't draw crowds, especially with our young people, like Dr. Paul does.
Yeah, he certainly does have kind of a, you know, a good support from, you know, the youngsters. And I don't know, actually, did you get a chance to watch his show on Jay Leno? I don't know if you had a chance to catch. I think he was again on the show, but he was on a couple of months back, and, you know, he had a lot of support from, I don't know if you've heard of, I believe his name's Joe Rogan. And, you know, it was kind of a young crowd that, you know, was at the event, and kind of a good thing for, you know, Dr. Paul.
Who's Joe Rogan?
He's kind of, I guess, entertainer. He's been, he's done some work. He's been kind of a comedian, too, and he was also on that show. I don't know if you've watched it, Fear Factor.
I was thinking of Josh Rogan. Isn't that a singer or actor or something? I mean, it's a different name.
Yeah, I think that's probably somebody a little bit different there, but Joe Rogan, he's actually been on Alex Jones' show quite a few times. I think they're pretty good friends. But, yeah, he used to be on that show, Fear Factor, and, yeah, he was on the show with Dr. Paul, and, you know, he came out there with the, you know, Ron Paul shirt sporting him, and, you know, again, you could see even in the audience that, you know, most of the people there were kind of a young college crowd, you know, supporting him and cheering him on the show.
Sorry, what show was this he came out with the Ron Paul shirt?
It was on Jay Leno.
Not last week.
Yeah, not on the last week's show. This was a couple of months back. I don't know if you remember.
I think I saw that one, but I don't remember that aspect of it. But I saw it last week, and, you know, he was pretty good. I just wish that he had been more combative during his campaign. You know, he's too nice of a guy, and mm-hmm. I wish he would have taken the initiative more. He did a little bit later on. I think too little, too late.
Right.
Again, I wish I could have been one of somebody coaching him, because I thought that's what he needed. The couple of key phrases. What I wanted him to say was that, quote, I, meaning Dr. Paul, I represent the Jeffersonian constitutional wing of the Republican Party, which is where the Republican Party should be. I'd like to let his opponents, Rush Limbaugh and all that, all those neocon bastards, deal with that. You know, I would have really confronted them and would have been like water off a duck's back. Bring it on, Rush. Bring it on, Hannity.
Certainly. Actually,
you know, these Republicans, they say they support the Constitution, you know, which they do as long as it suits them. But then when you bring up, well, you know what, prohibits torture and all this kind of stuff, then they try to weasel their way out of it. Because most Republican, at least the hierarchy, they're just a bunch of big government Republicans, big spending rhinos, if you know the rhino word, Republican in name only. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, that's a lot of what that is. So the cool thing is that you are realizing this much sooner than I did, mm-hmm. age-wise, where I was hip to it. I wasn't hip to it as clearly as I am now, but with the advent of the internet and you being exposed to my wisdom, of course, you are much more aware of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, I had to get your take. What's kind of your thought about Ron Paul's son?
You know, I like Rand Paul, but I don't trust him as much as I do his father. I think his father is much more principled, and I think Rand is much more willing to play ball. I hope I'm wrong. Yeah. But I think he's more willing to play ball with the globalists and the neocons, unless he would just, insert himself and be like a mole. But I don't see it happening. But, I mean, I'm glad he got elected, and hopefully he can do something down the line. The thing is, and I would have said this up front, too, if I was Ron Paul. I would have said, you know, if I run third party, the Republican hierarchy, they're going to persecute my son on all his future opportunities to run as a president. So I would have said that up front, just to let them know. And then if I chose to run as a third party, I would, but I would have kept saying that, and that I would say, this doesn't mean that you have to persecute my son Rand, but as was pointed out to me, Dr. Paul doesn't have to run, but he could endorse the Libertarian candidate.
Sure.
You know, you can say, hey, I'm not running, but this is who I'm endorsing. So, you know, it's definitely not the same thing. Yep. But I wouldn't mind if he ran, you know, because most of us principled Ron Paul supporters, we would never vote for anyone other than him. Unless we can write his name in, we just won't vote. I mean, I'll vote for the Libertarian candidate, who will probably be Gary Johnson. But, you know, I mean, would you vote for Romney or Gingrich? Or sanitarium?
All I can do is laugh about that.
Yeah, me too. It's
laugh about it.
It's so sad. It's comical.
Yeah, I mean, right there, as you pointed out. I mean, it's a joke. It's really a joke, and people really need to start waking up to this and realize that the only real candidate out there is Dr. Paul, the only one who really cares about about this country on a long-term basis is Dr. Paul. I mean, who else has really been kind of speaking out against everything that has been happening, but that guy has just been straightforward, clean cut, and to the point about how things have been going in this country. But people basically want to be in that situation where everything is just spoon fed to them, and they're fine with that. And we need to get out of that. I mean, can you imagine how much our forefathers are rolling in their graves, just seeing how bad it is right now? I mean, it's going against everything this country fought for.
Yep, and it's been thrown in your lap, and I just hope that your generation can weather it. A lot of kids are still living at home because they're, postgraduate or, even just out of high school, or whatever, because of the job market. And, thank goodness kids have a place to go, but it's just, I don't see it getting any better, and they keep talking about, it's improving this and that. I think it's just a facade.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Yeah, I think partially it's, as you're saying, it's just kind of a big gimmick on their part, but at the same time, I think, you have to have, the power of intention where, that you just think positive and, results may not show immediately, but certainly if you're willing to, stay focused and, as you said, weather the storm, sooner or later, you're going to come back and, win the game.
That's right. That's right. Minimum wage jobs for everyone.
Yeah.
So what are you, tomorrow when you go to this job fair, are you especially looking for, say, something in finance?
Yeah, I think just kind of open-minded, honestly. I mean, yeah, finance is going to be kind of the area that I will be studying, but, if I can find something in, the energy fields or, just anything out there that, a good company or, something tailored towards my MBA, sure, I'll definitely do that. But, definitely just got to take it in stride.
Now, in energy companies, living in Texas, are you going to be an oil rig worker? Are you going to work on oil wells?
Yeah, I don't know about that, as much so. But, there's plenty of, companies there that absorb a lot of the MBA students now.
I've heard it's pretty dangerous, that work, the guys that literally are out there, throwing those wrenches on those pipes and whatnot. That's pretty dangerous.
Yeah, absolutely. But, one other thing to, keep in mind, at least, you were kind of talking to me about this when our family moved out here, but, Texas is, thankfully doing better than, a lot of the other states out there. I know I had given you examples of people that
That's
are
true.
Older than me, graduated, way before me, from the same university at Penn State, but, they're still sitting at home jobless, and, I'm at least thankful, at least that that I'm getting these opportunities, and that's the best part, that at least you can do something with that.
Well, that's true, and that's why it's good that you're studying business and accounting, and you're getting that finance and all that stuff, so you'll be more versatile and able to perform different jobs. And consequently, being hopefully, more sought after, or headhunters be interested in you.
Yeah, I think, again, it's just about, opportunity and taking advantage of it at the right amount of time. You're not going to get anything by just sitting and complaining about, not getting something in your field. I mean, that's just kind of the case.
Well, that's why a lot of, even former factory workers or whatnot, they have to learn other skills if those factories are closing or they need other you know, other skilled employees, even if you've been with a company for years, you gotta train, you gotta retool, you gotta do what you gotta do.
Right.
Absolutely. You know, so it is what it is.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm gonna wind down here, Angad. Thanks for coming back on. Best
sure.
of luck tomorrow at your job searching, and I hope it goes well for you, but, you know, hang on to your current job till something else comes along.
Yeah, absolutely, and, you know, thanks again, PK, for having me on the show, and, you know, definitely have to do this again sometime.
Yeah, well, you're welcome, and whatever you do, and your friends, do not enlist. You know, do not enlist. It's not worth it. So, again, I'm going to sign off right now. Thanks again to you and my friend John. Angad, have a good one. And this is your host, PK. I'm signing off now, but I'm here every Monday evening on bbsradio.com, station 2, 8:55 Pacific, 10:55 Central, and 11:55 Eastern. So, until next week, this is your humble host, PK, signing off. Thanks, everyone.